This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
You bet. Let's do this. Welcome in, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker Campbell. And championship weekend, it is finally here. We've got you covered over the next 2 hours, and we will discuss who's going to punch their ticket to the college football playoff and who will do enough to impress the committee. Also, in our first segment, we're going to highlight some Oklahoma football and the Sooners' bowl projections after their regular season finale. But first, the Big E Sports Show is powered by Progressive Insurance. And did you know? No. The drivers who switch and save with Progressive, they save nearly $700 on average. Go to progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Always thrilled to have back with us. We're going to open up those phone lines. CBS Sports Radio Network in Oklahoma City. That's my guy, James Hale, who I trust you had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday and you didn't consume 5,000 calories in the first 10 minutes.
No, 3,337.
Oh, okay. So I stand corrected.
It wasn't 5,000, though, so... I always enjoy the leftovers. I mean, I've been eating ham and turkey sandwiches since. And so that's really the Thanksgiving for me. So,
we've got a lot.
And pumpkin pie every day. I mean, you know, if you can't have pumpkin pie every day, then what's the problem? Why even have Thanksgiving? I know some people want, you know, I'm a big pecan pie, too. So that's kind of what I'm munching on right now.
Pumpkin pie, number one, but you got to have some rum cake, too. Come on, throw that in there.
There you go.
Hey, let's talk about our Sooners.
Rum in it.
That'll take it up a notch, right? So talk to me about Oklahoma. Here we are in week 14, and it's appearing they're going to play, Arizona in the Alamo Bowl? I mean, what are your projections? Where are we at?
Well, that's what I think will happen. I mean, you can have some crazy things happen today, and, you know, and that could cause OU, and they could get into that, you know, Power 6 Bowl or whatever they call it. So, you know, maybe they could get up there, but it looks like it's going to be the Alamo Bowl. The Alamo Bowl's been to the last three Sooner home games. They really want OU. They know OU will be able to travel down there, and they'll have a bunch of people there. It will be a good matchup if it is Arizona or USC or whoever it is. And, you know, they're pretty thrilled if that's going to be the case. And, you know, so it wouldn't surprise me if OU's not into that. I think if it's not there, maybe the Fiesta Bowl. Because OU loves to go out there. Sooner fans love Arizona. That would be a pretty good matchup. So, you know, I think it's going to be one of those two. I really can't see OU sneaking into the Cotton Bowl or any of the other bowls. So I kind of think this is the way it's going
to
be.
James, what's your heart's desire? Who would you like to see Oklahoma match up against and go eye-to-eye, toe-to-toe?
I don't want them to play USC. You know, all the talk about that would be Lincoln Riley. And we'd be drudging that up again, you know, talking about, you know, he left, why he left. You know, he would have Oklahoma media, you know, badgering him about it. He'd be getting mad about it. That's what they want to talk about. Nobody'd really be talking about the game. I doubt if Caleb would play in the game. Maybe he would if it's Oklahoma. I doubt it. I mean, if he's going to be the first pick in the draft, everybody's going to tell him not to play in a game that doesn't really mean anything. So I hope they don't play USC. There's just too many attachments right now between the Sooners and the Trojans. But Oklahoma and Arizona would be a pretty good matchup. Two good offensive teams, young coaches running the programs. They've had a pretty good year at Arizona. And, you know, I think that would be a good matchup between everybody.
You were listening to the familiar voice. That is James Hale, CBS Sports Radio Network, host of Total Sports. I always like to pause and connect with our audience. Where can they find you and subscribe to Patreon?
Just go to Die Hard Sooner Report. You Google that. It's a Patreon account for a small stipend. You get 3 to 5 OU reports on OU football, recruiting, other sports at OU. And I keep them short. You know, the longest I ever go is 6 minutes. Most of the time it's 2 or 3. You get all the information you need. You get the nuts and bolts of it. If there's anything to really dive into, I dive into it there. And I'm also on CBS Sports Radio 105.3 HD1 stream, PPBC, out of Oklahoma City, 2 to 5 Central Time every day. And I'm on X. You really like said it that way?
I'm on X
at JHale24.
I still say Twitter, James. It's all good.
I know, because that's what it is.
That's right.
You know, hey, you know why? Why people do some things kind of just make you go, what?
Yeah.
Why?
It doesn't sound right. So let's talk some more as far as Oklahoma. They finish the regular season, 10-2 record, including 7-2 in Big 12 conference play. And already the movement is taking place. Oklahoma has promoted from within Seth Luttrell from offensive analyst to offensive coordinator and hired Joe John Finley. So what do we need to know about the new offensive coordinators?
Well, Jeff Lebby got the head coaching job at Mississippi State. He wouldn't have left if he didn't get a head coaching job in the SEC. So congratulations to Jeff, and we'll see how that goes with him. Brent could have gone a million different directions. Every offensive coordinator in the modern era that has been an offensive coordinator, heck, you can go back to Barry Switzer's time. You know, Galen Hall was an offensive coordinator at OU for a long time. Then he was the coach at Florida for a while, right? He became a head coach. Mack Brown became a head coach. Watson Brown became a head coach. Everybody that's been an offensive coordinator at OU seems to always become a head coach. I mean, it's not totally across the board, but it's close. And so Jeff Lebby has kept that tradition going, and that's great. And Brent could have gone in a number of different directions. When guys are looking for opportunity or they're looking to better themselves and that kind of position comes open at OU, they're going to want to come. So he heard from a lot of people, but when Seth Luttrell got let go at North Texas, which is a big mistake by North Texas, when they let him go after 7 years, 7 years when he won two championships, went to bowls every year, they let him go anyway. When they did, you know, Seth kind of wanted a place to land, called Brent. Well, Brent absolutely wanted Seth on his staff and hired him as a offensive analyst. That's not the highest paid job, but, you know, Seth probably made more than the basic analyst. And he got back to Norman, Oklahoma. His family wasn't with him. He just kind of bachelored it for a while. Becca wasn't with him of the two kids. They came up on weekends and went to the game, you know, like everybody, every other fan, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So, but, you know, Brent has always respected Seth. The OU coaches every year in the summer would go down to Arlington or, you know, Dallas, you know, at the North Texas summer camp. And Seth, because he knows Bill Beedenbaugh really well, he's coached with Bill at Arizona and Texas Tech, you know, he'd have several coaches down to work that camp, and he would show them the best time, the best time. And I'm always, every year I'm down there at that camp, covering that camp, and I'm saying to myself, how are these OU coaches going to make it? How are they going to make it through camp? It's 115 degrees, and there's Bill Beedenbaugh put the offensive lineman through the faces, and I'm going, he's going to throw up. I know he's going to throw up, but he didn't. And, you know, so the relationship between Seth and the OU coaches was already very strong. And then he got a chance for a year to work with Jeff Lebby. And, you know, Seth's offense is very similar to Lebby's. It's a little bit different. But he got to learn the nuances of the Art Briles, you know, the veer shoot, whatever you want to call it. And he got to learn a little bit about that and got to get into that a little bit. And the entire year, Brent's saying to himself, man, if I can hire Seth Luttrell, I'm going to do it. I mean, he's an Oklahoma legacy. His dad was a wishbone quarterback in the Sooners national championship years. Wishbone fullback, I'm sorry, from 74, 75. Jimmy's a great guy. He's Boomer Sooner all the way. They're from Muskogee, Oklahoma. You can't get more Oklahoma than this.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Brent just wanted him on the staff, but he didn't have an opening. And Brent wasn't going to let anybody go. So, you know, it had to happen or Seth was going to have to find a job as an offensive coordinator or, you know, as a head coach because he's in his prime earning age and his wife's telling him, hey, we got to get busy here. So, you know, for the 1 year, he was good and the family liked it. And then when Jeff jumped, Brent knew he had a ready-made situation. But Sooner fandom, they want him to go after the big name, whoever that is. They want him to go find that elite offensive coordinator, no matter who that is. They want him to go after that guy. But Brent says, I've already got him. His name's Seth Luttrell. And I got Joe John Finley, who's an up-and-comer that has two offers right now where he can be an offensive coordinator at another school. He goes, if I already got two guys like this, one guy in Seth Luttrell, that every time he's been an offensive coordinator, he's had a top-five offense. He's worked under some of the greatest minds in college football. And when you think about the guys he's worked with and who he's been with and the kind of statistics that he has, Brent just went, hey, this is pretty stupid. I know what I'm going to do. I know I don't need to, go, a million miles out of the way. We've got the guy that we want to go with, and this is how we're going to do it. And so we went with these guys. And some people don't like it because, again, it's not a splash hire. But if you're a guy like me that's covered Oklahoma forever, it's a splash hire. You get Seth Luttrell back. You get a Boomer Sooner, captain of the 2000 National Championship team back, a guy that every offense he commands is an elite offense in college football, and he wants to come back and be a coach on your staff. Just think of the recruiting tales.
Yes.
He's going to be able to say when he walks into that room, he's a dynamite personality. His wife is a queen. His two kids are really great. Read the story about the battle with his son that they had with his son when he was born. It is gut-wrenching. It's heartwarming. But, he's doing fine today, and so they survived it. But it really, anytime you have a child sick and he's coaching football, and, Brent's kind of going through this now with Julie Venables and her fight against cancer, breast cancer. Football's such a demanding job, but yet, you've got your little boy that's just born, and he's fighting for his life. And so Seth's a hardened individual that's a wonderful guy. He's tough as nails. Don't fight him anywhere. Don't meet him anywhere and try to throw punches with him. He's going to whip your butt. He's the perfect hire. OU will be a tougher offensive team with him, and Joe John will be the smooth guy that will come in and, work the outside angles because he's been with Levy that long. He's been around Art Briles some, so he knows the nuances of that offense. It's a perfect marriage. I think people will love it once they get into it.
Mm-hmm. The college football conversation continues with James Hale from CBS Sports Radio Network after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, we are so glad you're with us. Hour one, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show, going one-on-one with our guy, James Hale, CBS Sports Radio Network. And you've kind of helped us understand the backstory why Oklahoma opted to hire within with their co-offensive coordinators. Talk some more. Expound on the fact that, with you being in sports radio in OKC, what has been the reaction from Sooner fans?
Well, it's been mixed emotions, number one. Look, Jeff Levy had a great offense. OU's fourth in offense this year.
Right.
And yet some people didn't like him as offensive coordinator. Now, that's the life of being a journalist covering Oklahoma in the state of Oklahoma and actually taking phone calls and talking to people, because fans are just different. My job is to keep a rational idea and really look at it and see if they're right. Or, Brent's made this decision, is he right? And Brent's 99% of the time right? So, if you just take a look at it, but the fandom, they have mixed emotions about this. Again, they think OU should be able to go out and get whoever the biggest name offensive coordinator is. Back in the day when Barry went out and got Mack Brown to come in. But remember, where was Mack coaching when he came to OU? I know he went to Tulane afterwards. Anyway, he wasn't a huge name at that time. He became a huge name, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jim Donnan, when he came in, was at Georgia, wasn't he? And, but he wasn't a huge name. But again, OU went outside. And, those guys modified the wishbone some, and that's what Barry was looking for, a way to modify it. Brent's not looking to modify what they're doing offensively. Oh, he doesn't mind that Seth comes in and adds his little 2 cents worth, but he looks at Seth's offense. Brent probably studied more of North Texas offense in the last 4 or 5 days than Seth has himself. I mean, he looked at that offense and studied it. And, mm-hmm. How tough would it be to stop? And he understands, that the offenses are going to be pretty similar anyway. If you're a Sooner fan, you don't mind this at all. Really, you don't. I mean, Seth Luttrell is a big name in the history of OU football. I mean, he's the captain, one of the four captains of the 2000 National Championship team. He's a legacy. Everybody loves his dad, Jimmy Luttrell. I still get questions about Jimmy Luttrell. I've got a picture of Seth Luttrell running the football, and it's against Pittsburgh, I think. And in this photo is the late Steve Davis, who just got nominated for the Oklahoma Hall of Fame. Elvis Peacock, one of the great running backs with one of the greatest names in college football history, and Joe Washington in this photo. And here's Jimmy running the ball. It looks like he's tipping sideways to the right, but he's just a raw-boned Muskogee guy running the fullback on the belly series, running straight through. And I can't wait to see Jimmy. I'm going, Jimmy, are you barely standing up here? I mean, it looks like you're about to fall over. The other three guys look beautiful running. I know what he's going to say. He's going to say, why did Steve give me the balls? What he's going to say. Yeah. But he did, and he often did because he was the fullback of the Bentley series.
Hey, good stuff. CBS Sports Radio Network, James Hale with us. And give me a hit. Let's talk about Jeff Lebby, new head coach at Mississippi State, big time news. What are your expectations for him? And, you know, just and also reflect on, you know, what all he did accomplish during his time at Oklahoma.
Well, Mississippi State is a tough job. Zach Selman is the new AD. Zach came from Joe Castiglione's tree at OU, and he's Dewey Selman's younger son. So there's a lot of lineage, and everybody trusts Seth, and everybody likes Seth. Everybody believes when Joe retires that Seth will come back and be the AD at OU. Now that he's at Mississippi State, we don't know that, but everybody still believes someday Zach Selman will be the AD at OU. Zach knew Jeff Lebby. The families were very close. They always hung out with each other. They did cookouts together. They vacationed together. They were very, very close. I don't know if Zach ever told Jeff, if I ever become an AD somewhere, you're going to be my head coach. I don't know if that conversation was held or not, but it wouldn't have surprised me if it was. And so when he got the job at Mississippi State, I immediately started saying, well, watch Jeff Lebby here, because they're very close. Now, whether or not the rest of the boosters were going to be sold on a guy that's never been a head coach, and all that, that's another story and that's another debate. But Zach is very good at salesmanship. He's been a fundraiser his whole life. And he sold the fact that he feels Jeff Lebby is the best offensive mind in college football, that Jeff can build a staff, that he will be able to build a defensive staff, and that certainly offensively he will rival what they had, before, when the Pirate was running Mississippi State's offense.
Oh, yeah.
And, before he passed away.
Mike Leach.
So at Mississippi State, Mike Leach had 3 9-win seasons. They've only had 3 10-win seasons in their whole career. Now, they've never won the SEC. So it's an incredibly tough job. But one way that Mike was surviving was that he was outscoring everybody. I mean, he would score 42 and hope his defense could hold him to 41. And that's how he was winning. That's how Jeff's going to have to win, too. He's going to have to get him a quarterback, and he's going to have to get him some receivers and skill guys and hope that's going to be good enough to attract some linemen and some defensive guys. And that's how he's going to build this team. Jeff's offense is elite. It's great. I mean, OU's had great, even in their 6 and 7 years, often, Dylan got hurt in the middle of the season 2 years ago, and it took him a while to get going again. But defensively is how they lost 5 straight games by 7 points or less. It always seemed like the defense was on the field needing a stop, and they couldn't do it. Now, you could say the offense could have scored more points, and I agree. But when you're in the top 10 scoring and you're in the top 4 offensively, total offense, it's hard to complain about the offense, and that's certainly where OU was last year. And, Jeff's going to be able to post those kind of numbers. His offense works. He knows how to put together an offensive staff. He wanted Joe John Finley, I think, to be his offensive coordinator. Instead, Joe John's staying at OU, so it's going to be interesting to see who he gets on his staff. I think he's going to hire a couple of support staff guys from OU, like Phil Lodeholt and a couple of other guys. And we'll see. I expect Jeff's going to win. I think it's a tough job, though, and the SEC is a tough league. He's not taking on a program that's in as good a shape as what he just left at Oklahoma. So he's got to build it, and we'll see if he can do it.
Hey, we are winding down our time. In fact, only have time for about one more question. James Hale, our very special guest. What a great way to kick off championship weekend. CBS Sports Radio Network, James Hale. 2024, I mean, it's going to be here before you know it. A significant year for Oklahoma and for Texas, two teams moving to the SEC. How do you see these guys transitioning?
I think they're going to be just fine. I'm not one that worries about this whatsoever. From Oklahoma's standpoint, they're Oklahoma. I mean, Oklahoma is setting a standard in college football. Very few other teams are. And sure, there's a couple of teams in the SEC that maybe right now, at this particular time period, are above OU. But the rest of the league is right there. You know, there's a few schools that might be with OU. And I know OU, you know, they had a tough time in the Big 12 winning some of these games. But OU's getting better. Brent's building this team. And so is Steve Sarkisian at Texas. I mean, Texas, especially if Quinn Ewers comes back next year, and all signs point that he is, Texas is going to be really good going into the SEC. If I'm the other SEC teams, I'm saying to myself, not that, okay, well, that's great, Oklahoma and Texas are coming in. I'm saying, holy smokes, Oklahoma and Texas are coming in? Because those are two really good programs, and I think both programs are going to do well in the SEC, and they're going to be just fine.
What a great way to kick off our program, James Hale. Follow him on X or Twitter. James, tell our audience where to go.
All you got to do, you know, Die Hard Sooner Report, and it's a Patreon account, a small stipend. You get three to five podcasts a day. On X, I'm at jhale24, CBS Sports Radio, 105.3 HD1. Stream it at ppbc.com.
Good stuff. Have a great weekend. Enjoy championship weekend. We'll talk soon. Thanks, Jay.
All right. See you.
Stick around. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back after this quick break.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Elissa Walker Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, welcome back. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Love to connect at E Radio Sports. Take us anywhere, anytime. Download our app for all the latest sporting news and developing stories. The countdown is on for the 2023 SEC Championship Game Day. It's finally here, and it's always one of the biggest games of the college football season. And we are so thrilled to have back with us sports writer from UGASports.com. That's my good friend, Patrick Garpin. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, Elissa, I appreciate you having me on again.
Well, let's talk about this. I mean, what is your anxiety level this afternoon? Because you know tonight it's going to be an emotional game.
Yeah, I tell you, I'm excited because for the SEC championship, it's kind of a preview what some people feels perhaps the two best teams in the country right now. I think they're definitely part of the top four teams currently. But yeah, to see, you know, a upper bowl level type matchup in a conference championship. I'm looking forward to later.
Well, Georgia, they've got a lot of momentum right now, Patrick, coming off that 31-23 win over its rival, Georgia Tech. But from what I understand, I mean, Georgia has never beaten Alabama in an SEC title game. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. Kind of a little backstory. They've actually hadn't beaten Alabama in Atlanta since 1942.
Wow.
Since then, playing them four times, going 0-0 in the SEC, and then, let's see, 2012, 2018, and 2021. And then that fourth time was for the national title. The 2017 season played in 2018. So there's the 0-4. But yeah, you're right. 0-3 against Alabama in SEC title games.
Well, as we look forward to the game that'll get underway 4:00 Eastern time, would you agree that both of these teams, when we talk about Alabama and Georgia, they're facing the best defense that they have played against all season long? I mean, I'm anticipating that this is going to be a low scoring game.
Well, I know from the Georgia end, it's certainly the best defense they played. In fact, entering this game, Georgia hasn't played a defense ranked in currently total defense better than 40th. And I think Alabama's currently the 17th ranked. So this is going to be a new test. I mean, this is definitely the best defense Georgia and quarterback Carson Beck have faced this season.
Okay, you've teed me up. What a beautiful segue. Let's talk about the quarterback in Carson Beck. And he has certainly kept the Georgia Bulldogs rolling and number one after replacing two-time national championship quarterback in Stetson Bennett. So what has been the key to his transition, his transformation at the QB position?
You know, I think it all started years ago when he got to Georgia way back in 2020, and he's just kind of waited his turn. Carson has, you know, behind, JT Daniels at one point, and then it looked like he could be the starter early on in the 2021 season when Daniels went down, but Bennett was the guy that came in. So Carson, next thing you know, he's a reserve for the next two seasons, and he entered this season with some experience. And I've seen development, though, since those first, say, three or four games. And it began, what I remember seeing was on the road in a tough environment. He just kind of came of age at Auburn. And since then, including a great away performance at Tennessee, he's just developed into, I think he's probably even better than what most optimistic Georgia fans thought they would get this year. And, you know, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the country. I think he ranks eighth currently in passer rating. By comparison, Stetson Bennett, you know, when he was a Heisman finalist last year, ranked 11th. So Carson's had an excellent season. But to answer your question, Alyssa, I think the experience entering this season, he was been able to work really well with offensive coordinator Mike Bobo, and it's just worked out. And he's only seemingly gotten better as the year has gone on.
Mm-hmm. Carson Beck certainly had some big shoes to fill, but you know, one of the reasons he's been able to execute and make big time plays, touched on it. I mean, when you have a great offensive line that's been rock solid for the Bulldogs all year long, I mean, that's tremendous.
Yeah, and that's another reason he's done as well as he has. He hasn't been touched. He's only been sacked 9 times all season. Georgia's a team and, you know, approximately 400 pass attempts have only been sacked 10 times all season. That's going to be a key for Alabama. I mean, if Alabama's going to win this game, I think they're going to have to put some pressure on Carson Beck, on a quarterback who hasn't really been pressured all season. So that's an interesting matchup, if you will. I'm looking forward to seeing.
It is a fascinating matchup. The 2023 SEC Championship about to get underway. 4:00 Eastern time on CBS, Alabama, Georgia. What's the biggest concern that you have facing Alabama?
I think for Georgia, it's Jalen Milroe, their quarterback. You know, I'll be honest, the one thing about this Alabama offense that say when Georgia would play them in the past, let's say 2020, for example, when they had three to five guys on offense that just really superstar standout players that could practically beat your defense by themselves, right? From receivers, running back. This year, Alabama, they're not that way. It's all, and especially with this game, going to be Jalen Milroe, the quarterback. And if Jalen Milroe can get loose running the football, you know, if he can extend plays, Georgia's been vulnerable to that this season, and Georgia's run defense just isn't what it has been in previous years. So if I'm Georgia, they need to be really concerned with Jalen Milroe, and I would think especially him when he takes off running the ball.
I know you're on the program to talk about Georgia, but it seems like there's been a lot of chatter about, like, Alabama is a little bit different than in years past. What have you seen? You're right there in the SEC. What have they shown you?
Yeah, I think they're a little like Georgia this year in that they're just not as dominant beating teams like maybe they're accustomed to. You know, they had some close wins this year. I mean, they were lucky to beat a very substandard Arkansas team earlier in the year. They had concerns playing against South Florida as well. I will say though, those were, and their loss was against Texas early in the year.
Right.
That was earlier in the year. And I think similar to, you know, the, what I said about Carson Beck kind of developing through the season, I think Alabama as a whole has definitely gotten better as the season has gone on. So, yeah, that's, you know, I think that's definitely something positive for the Crimson Tide.
Recruiting writer, UGASports.com, Patrick Garbin, our very special guest, Sports Map Radio Network. A Georgia win will solidify the Bulldogs in the college football playoff. Let's flip the script a little bit. I mean, what will happen if Alabama should win? Will two teams, will Georgia, Alabama, both get into the college football playoff? What say you?
You know, a lot of crazy things can happen, Alyssa. I mean, you know the teams, and you know that that you know, if certain teams win, then just by default they would get in. Although a Georgia loss today, I still think they would deserve to be one of the top four teams in the playoff. I don't think that's going to necessarily happen unless other teams lose too. Alabama, they need to win, but I think, you know, if Alabama wins, they should no doubt be put in the top four. And I think Georgia, if they were to lose, I think although they just probably would deserve to be in the top four, I think it would be a tall order.
It is
going to get in.
Yeah, it's gonna, the countdown's on. It's going to be fascinating to watch. Alabama, Georgia, SEC features a matchup for the ages at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, one of the biggest games of the season. We cannot wait. And, you know, we opened up our program, Patrick, and we were talking about Oklahoma. We were talking about Texas and that transition coming over to the SEC. What's the chatter? What's the word out there in the conference? I mean, what are they looking forward to?
You know, well, they just released a few dates for next year,
mm-hmm.
and you know, at least amongst the Georgia crowd, the chatter is the Texas date, which happens to be, I believe, when Austin has some grand race in the city that attracts hundreds of thousands of visitors.
Oh my!
So Georgia fans, and even if that wasn't going on, they would already be, you know, trying to get their hotels.
Yeah,
it's already on. I mean, they are starting to fill up flights, accommodations, hotels, everything. And as media members, we're sitting here like, our outlets might need to go ahead and get on the ball, you know. Because so, yeah, that's just happened here recently. Georgia fans already just, and we got a, and they got 11 months, right, already planning to play at Texas.
Well, it's 2024. It is going to be a magical year for college football. Enjoy all the coverage. Countdown's on. SEC championship game. Patrick, we really appreciate you stepping aside from all of your work to join us on the program this afternoon. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Alyssa. Appreciate y'all having me on.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. Always love to connect with our audience coast to coast. At eRadio Sports, info at eradiosports.com, podcastarena.com. And again, we make it so easy. Just download our app for all the latest sporting news and the developing stories. That is Sports Map Radio. Here it is, the first weekend in the month of December, and it has been such an exciting week because Tiger Woods is back competing at the Hero World Challenge. And we're thrilled to break it all down and have with us that, of course, is former PGA pro Larry Miller. And I trust that you and Connie had a memorable holiday getaway. Of course, your destination was right here in the Lone Star State. Did you guys have a good time?
We did. We always enjoy going to Texas to see family, and we get a little fishing in with the grandkids, which they love. So it was great. We always have a good time. I love the state of Texas.
Well, we've been talking about it on the program. I mean, golf got a huge shot in the arm with the return of Tiger Woods. And, you know, since you are a swing instructor, I mean, from a technical standpoint, what did you learn from watching Tiger Woods?
Oh, I think he's swinging really well. Of course, you know, when Tiger can be a little bit off with his swing, and it still looks beautiful. He's got such a great golf swing. But
yeah,
I think I don't think there's anything wrong with his golf swing technically. I think it's just rust. It's just a matter of rust. He's got to wear that off. And I think he says he's healthy. He looks healthy. You don't even see much of a limp at all, if any. And so, you know, the way he swings the club, and as good as he is, if he stays healthy, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets that one more victory and passes Sam Snead for the all-time victories.
You know, Larry, he's only played in 5 tournaments since that car crash, and he had that ankle fusion surgery. So how does your body change when you fuse something? I mean, what comes to my mind, I mean, you're going to not have the same range of motion. But in the game of golf, I mean, you've had back surgery. I mean, let's talk about that impact.
Yes, it has an impact because it absolutely will shorten your turn. You just can't turn the way that you could before, you know, as much of a turn. But, you know, let me tell you, there's a lot of ways to produce power and speed in the golf swing. And if you look at Tiger Woods from the waist up, the guy is a, you know, he looks like some kind of Olympic weightlifter or something.
He does, yes.
Yeah, he is solid from the waist up. And so he's able to still, as strong as he is in the upper body, even though he can't turn as much and he can't use his legs like he used to and push off the ground like he did, he can still generate tremendous speed because of his upper body strength. Now, some players, you know, as I said, you get power in various ways. Look at Ben Hogan. He was 145 pounds and 5'7". But he could, you know, hit a persimmon driver in an old Bellotta golf ball 300 yards when he wanted to. So you don't have to be a Brooks Koepka, you know, to move the ball out there. And so Tiger's doing it. They said that his ball speed is up in the upper 170s, which is really, really good and plenty long enough. But he's doing it with his upper body. But as far as his golf swing goes, it's a thing of beauty, you know, technically, and it looks really good to me.
Well, you're spot on. I mean, because after watching him, I mean, that's the biggest adjustment that we have seen. He's able to create speed because it's more with his upper body, and he's alleviating the stress off his foot. But I just have to wonder, I mean, you often talk about being a lower body releaser. How difficult is it to make that type of adjustment or transition where you're relying on your upper body as opposed to your lower?
Well, he has such good body control that he's able to do that. I mean, listen, that's one of the many reasons why he's probably the best player that ever played the game, is because of his knowledge of the golf swing and his adaptability. So, you know, he can adjust to pretty much anything. The only thing that could drag him down is if he's in severe pain and just can't take the walk. But as far as being standing still and making a golf swing, well, he's as good as ever. So it remains to be seen. Now, he's got grand plans for this year. He's talking about, you know, multiple starts and all that. And so I think he must really feel good physically to say that, to come out and say that. But we'll see if it actually happens once he starts playing tournaments and whether or not he can have the stamina to keep it going.
Hey, glad you're with us. Former PGA Pro author Larry Miller is back with us. And so let's prognosticate. What are you expecting going forward? I mean, Tiger has gone on record saying that he wants to compete in at least one tournament a month. Can he do it?
Yes, I think he can if he takes it easy and builds up to it and doesn't try to force it early on. He doesn't have to chase distance. As I said, his ball speed is up in the upper 170s. And he doesn't need any more than that. The only thing he needs is to get the rust off. And I think it'll take 1, 2, 3 maybe tournaments before he's back in that competitive. You know, there's a huge difference between golf and tournament golf. And it's just different because the pressure is ratcheted up. You have to produce a score, and no matter what, no matter how good you are at staying calm, it's still different. It's very different. So it's a matter of getting the rust off and getting back used to being under the gun like that. But he's got a head start on all that because of who he is and what he's done. He can fall back on that. And so Once a month? Yeah, if his body holds up, he can do it. Can he win again? Absolutely he can, because we know about his short game. And once he gets the feel back with that, the way he's swinging the club, he can do it if he stays healthy.
Hey, we're in our sweet spot. We're talking golf. That's right, we're talking some Tiger. And even before the Hero World Challenge got underway, you know, they were showing on the Golf Channel just his time and his range session. And I just think about the competitors. I mean, what's got to be going through their minds when you look over to your right or you look to your left and you see your lifelong hero, Tiger Woods, you know, preparing to compete. And I think about you, Larry. I mean, like, you experienced something pretty comparable. I mean, like, you're on the range and there's Jack Nicklaus or Arnold Palmer. How did you prepare?
Well, the first thing is that you're elated to be in the midst of such company. And it's a double-edged sword, though. And then the other thing is that, you know, it can make you feel pretty inferior, you know, for these guys to look over and see Tiger swinging the club really well. Because, listen, when he was in his prime, if his name was on the leaderboard, you'd start seeing people crumble. Because they knew that how much better he was than they were. And so, you know, it's two things. They're really glad to have him back because he moves the needle and he gets people watching. I mean, the audience will double with him playing once a month every time he plays. And so they're happy about that. It keeps the game, you know, in a healthy place. But at the same time, if he starts playing well, he's going to scare a lot of people.
Will Tiger win again?
I think he will. I think he will because I think he's going to play enough tournaments. Apparently he's healthy enough. And listen, I've told you this before on the show, I've had multiple PGA Tour players tell me that Tiger Woods at 80% is better than anybody else. That's how good this guy is. I mean, look at what happened in the early 2000s and right before that, how dominant he was. So I think he will. I think he'll win again. It might be a lesser tournament where you don't have, you know, 20 or 25 stars playing in it. It could be, you know, like I say, something that is a field where it's limited or not as many superstars in it. But my prediction is I think Tiger Woods is going to win another PGA Tour event somewhere, sometime.
Former PGA pro Larry Miller, we're winding down our time. And before the Thanksgiving holiday, you provided some bold predictions and you had high praise about Ludvig Hebert. And it certainly came into fruition. It certainly has been an amazing 6 months for him as a pro. He wins at Sea Island and closes with his second straight under what's shot like a 61. So just overall, as we step back, I mean, what does the future hold for him in 2024?
No, he's a superstar. He could be the next real dominant player. He's got everything you need to do so. His technique is flawless. He's got the size. He's got the distance. He's got the head for it. He's already won. He's got the confidence. He's going to be a superstar. And he's doing it by hitting straight shots. This guy doesn't work the ball much.
Yes.
He hits it straight. And so, I was talking to Steven, your son, about this. I said, Luke, you know, we're going to work on that. We need to work on a dead straight shot that you know you're going to hit. Because let me tell you something. When you know you're going to hit it straight, you don't have to work the ball.
Yeah.
You can go at any pin you want if you know you're going to hit it straight. And that's what Ludvig is doing.
Well, he is certainly the player that is on everyone's mind. Some perhaps even saying that he's the next Tiger Woods. Is that hyperbole, or would you agree with that? I mean, what say you?
No, I think that's a pretty good assessment. I think that's very possible that he will be that person.
Wow, that's incredible. Larry, have a great weekend. Thank you so much for dropping by, and we look forward to another conversation next week. Thanks.
Great. Talk to you next week.
You bet. Sounds stick good. Around.
Bye-bye.
Much more
Bye-bye.
Coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.